Caroline William D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe in for Caroline Fenton today alongside the great Derek Mason. Willie Donick will be along in a little bit as the Predators do their morning skate thing as they'll take on the New Jersey Devils later on tonight with coverage beginning at 6 o'clock. I had Derek laughing during the break because basically we've just continued what you know we were just doing, just a different show name now. But there was a our article on NFL.com, and the headline reads as such. Eagles wide receiver A.J. Brown wants the ball but isn't a diva. Quote, I'll never be that guy.
You know, I don't – listen, it's okay to want the football, A.J. You deserve the football. You've shown that you are a – playmaker in this league. You're an explosive guy. You are a game changer. And if you want the football, you want the football. You know, the only reason people are asking AJ is because your demeanor on the sideline when you were sitting there. That's the only reason people are people approached you with the question, you know. It wasn't that, you know, I think you had what, three catches, you know, for 30 yards somewhere around there. But people wouldn't have known you were upset unless they saw you upset. You won the game. I've been there before. I get it. You know, you want to be a part of the game. You want to affect the game in a good way.
We've heard stories about you.
Yeah.
Coaches have
exactly. So, but I'm not, you know, it's the game's over with and you move on. Especially if you win, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
I move. Hey, listen, I ain't get the ball. You know, if it becomes a trend, then okay. If it was a one game thing, the way it seems like it was, it's not like they didn't try to get him the football. They tried, but, you know, the New York Giants took it away.
Yeah.
You know, and Devontae Smith was able to get more catches. And there have been some games where Devontae Smith didn't get but one or two catches, and you got five or six over 100 yards. I'm sure Devontae didn't sit on the sideline and make it be known through his body language because, you know, he looks at you probably as, you know, like the big brother in the room, considering even though you two guys are like maybe a year or two apart. But he looks at you as the older veteran guy. But nobody would have asked these questions. Again, nobody would have asked these questions if they didn't see, you know, the interaction between you and the coach and your face toward the end of the game or some parts of the game. Had they not seen that, had you not shown that to them, then there's no questions we can ask.
Right.
You know, so, man, be a diva if you want to. You know why? Because – listen, what I know in this league is that, you know, if you don't go out, one, if you don't play the way you're capable of playing, you're not going to get the ball. But if for some reason, you know, they're not getting you the ball or, you know, more than one game and it's sort of, you know, where do I fit in? If you don't say anything, won't nobody know.
Right.
So that's not being a diva. That's wanting to be a part of what's going on. That's wanting to impact the game in a way that you feel you can do. That's not being a diva. That's just like saying, hey, y'all paying me $20 million. Come on, let me be a part of this, you know. Do something. Get me the ball somehow, some way. And Philadelphia will this game, I'm pretty sure.
He says, quote, they throw the ball to me 100 times. I'm going to want it 101 times. Me personally, I just feel like I can change the game at any moment. Getting the ball often keeps you going, keeps you in rhythm. It definitely puts you in the zone. You're locked in. Of course, I want the ball, end quote. And then he says later, I'm never the receiver that's going to go on the sideline or try to cause problems on the sideline. I'm not that guy. I think that's what you could describe as a diva, but I'm not that person.
Not many receivers go on the sideline and start. And we don't know if he does or not. But it's sort of like the, you know, it's, what do they call it? It's just because you're not screaming and yelling doesn't mean you're not making people aware that you're disgruntled. You know, you're sitting on the sideline. Usually you're talking to everybody, laughing it up with people on the sideline. You're sitting on the sideline with your arms folded and your face stoic, like, and you're mad. Well, people know. You don't have to scream and yell, AJ. people know you're upset, you know?
Right.
You don't have to yell at everybody. That's probably even worse that you sit here and don't want to talk to anybody and you're on your own zone. That's worse than getting up and going to your quarterback, and you don't have to yell. Going to your quarterback and say, hey, you know, I think I beat, or going to the offensive coordinator, hey, I can get open.
Right.
Get me the ball.
But you've done that.
Oh, of course I've done that.
I remember Jeff Fisher coming to the studio telling the story. I think it was the Giants y'all beat? And Steve throws it to Drew, and you're like standing there wide open, and you're mad that you didn't get
because it's like, as a receiver, because it's like you're wide open. Yeah. And it's like, if you are the number one in the progression, you're like,
right, hey.
But sometimes the quarterback don't see you. But you don't hold. You say it right then and there. You get it over with, and then you go about your business.
You're like, Mac, hey, what's up?
And then you go about your business.
This is what I'll say. And this is where I think it's a good thing, because you were like this, and AJ's like this. That, we may say diva, but to me, that's dog. Uh-huh. That's having dog in you. That's that dog on a bone mentality like you talk about. That, hey, give me the damn ball. Mm-hmm. I'll do something with it. And the thing with AJ Brown is, he's not just a catch it and drop to the ground. He's a catch it and the yards after catch guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we saw here. That's what we've seen in Philadelphia. And so I think and you know, we've talked a lot about AJ. And AJ did have some diva qualities, especially when he's on Twitter. And then he would delete it. And I think that kind of led to
He is a diva, man.
He's a diva.
But there's nothing wrong with
it. But he backs it up.
Exactly.
That's the thing.
He's a diva that backs it up. If you get him – if he says, get me the football – damn it, get him the football,
right?
Because he will back it up. Ain't nothing wrong with it being a diva. You know, just go about your business. But when you're being a diva, you got to be able to back it up, which AJ can.
You got to back it up, and you can't cause distractions.
Exactly.
And like Antonio Brown was a diva, and he caused distractions.
They got him out of
there.
And
then he's out of there. The thing with AJ is I think they were afraid here that it was going that direction, mm-hmm. and then they didn't want to pay him, and so they got him out of here. Mm-hmm. But I think that for – any player at any position, you can have a little bit of a diva mentality, cocky mentality, however you want to put it. You just got to back it up.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we all do it. Quarterbacks do it. Offensive line do it. When you start passing too much, offensive line's like, listen, let's run the darn ball, okay? Come on. I know how to run block. Let's run block. I want to get dirty and I want to get, you know, sweat. I want to push on somebody. Let's run the football. So we all do it at some point. Quarterbacks do it. Running backs do it. I mean, heck, the running back for the J.K. Dobbins did it for Baltimore. And he was absolutely right.
Right.
Like, if you give me the ball, I'm productive. Give me a shot. That's not being a diva. That's saying, hey, listen, hey, I'm a playmaker. Let me make plays.
I mean, you think Joe Burrow's got a little diva in him?
Oh, man. people use the word as – I think sometimes people use it as negative.
Yeah.
And it's not negative, because I've never seen a top flight wide receiver, a wide receiver with dog in him, that may not get the ball one or two games, that just sits around and walk around as if everything's okay. I don't want him on my team. I don't. If you're not a part of what's going on, let me know, because there are so many things that are happening in the game. Sometimes you lose sight of every person and what's going on the field. If you feel you're not involved, come and let me know, you know, and then we'll get you involved. You know, I can't be paying attention to everybody. So having, you know, diva in you is not a bad thing. Don't let someone make you feel as if being a diva in this sport is a bad thing. No, it's not. Especially if you can back it up like AJ can.
Interesting little thing I just saw. I guess this came out last night from Pete Thamel, but Jonathan Krause, who was a receiver at Vanderbilt at one time, is going to be the new wide receivers coach at San Diego State. So good for him. It's cool. I think it's okay. It's part of personality. Mm-hmm. You got to keep it in check. But like I said, if you back it up, then obviously it's going to work out in your favor. And as you mentioned, mm-hmm. when we were talking about this in the 10 o'clock hour, the fact that Philadelphia has two legit number ones, mm-hmm. just like Cincinnati has two legit number ones, that makes it a nightmare for a defense, mm-hmm. because you double team one, well, all right, the other one's going to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it is.
Especially in the playoffs. In the regular season, it's a little bit different. But in the playoffs, it's like, listen, I don't care how we win. Let's just win. You know, I've went playoff games where I've caught one or two passes. It was like, I didn't care.
Yeah.
You know, my mindset has shifted. Like, this is no longer the regular season.
Hey, Drew, you got it today.
Exactly. Like, whatever you want it. Like, if y'all want to run the ball 100 times and we're going to win, damn it, let's do that. Because I want to get to the Super Bowl. So, if I catch 100 passes and we get to the Super Bowl, great. If I catch one pass and we get to the Super Bowl, that's great too, because we've ultimately reached the goal that we wanted to reach, and that was to get to the Super Bowl. No matter who the light shines on, if the team wins the Super Bowl, the light shines on everybody.
Right. And so that's all that matters.
Exactly.
You know, you could have I know you. You would obviously want to have more than one catch, but
yeah,
you know.
But when you're in the playoffs, your mindset changes because you know you don't have another week to redeem yourself. So it's like, if we win a game by kicking five field goals, then so be it. Let's kick five field goals. Let's get out of here and move on. You know, in the playoffs, if we win by, you know, Drew catching 10 passes for 100 yards and two touchdowns, did we win the game? Yeah. All right, let's keep going.
Yeah, let's party. Coming up next, I have a thought on the Titans and the offensive coordinator search that has kind of been sitting in my mind. We'll discuss that coming up next. It's Caroline, Willie, and D. Mace. Chase in for Caroline today here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. (laughs) 615-737-1025. That's our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You can weigh in on anything that we're talking about. Chase McCabe in for Caroline Fenton today. It is Caroline, Willie, and D. Mace live at Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. Predators and Devils later on this evening with pregame coverage at 6 o'clock. So I have a thought. Mm-hmm. Nathaniel Hackett has been hired as the offensive coordinator of the New York Jets. Keith Carter, the former offensive line coach for the Tennessee Titans, has been hired as the O-line coach and run game coordinator for the Jets. So he'll work with Nathaniel Hackett. Now everybody is putting the dots together of, oh, okay, Aaron Rodgers is going to go to the Jets. I think that'd be a good fit for Aaron Rodgers if he were to leave Green Bay. But we played this game last year with Denver, and they didn't get him. But so whenever you see over the last few days, okay, so-and-so's hired, so-and-so is an OC, everybody's going, well, when are the Titans going to announce their offensive coordinator? And I thought about this of, well, it's a good question, because all these signs and everybody kind of thought, all right, it's going to be Tim Kelly. They're just going to elevate him from passing game coordinator, and he's going to be the offensive coordinator. They've interviewed him. You know, they made that official. If they were going to do that, though, Derek, wouldn't they have already done it?
Yeah, you would think so. You know, but I think, you know, even if they do hire Tim Kelly, which there is a possibility they will, I think they want to do their due diligence at, you know, finding that next guy. They want to make sure that they, you know, went out and interviewed guys that they thought would be a good fit, or try to find guys who they believe is a good fit for this organization, for this coaching staff. Because I think Vrabel understands that, listen, you know, it starts, she ended up firing the GM,
yep,
bringing in another GM. If this thing doesn't, you know, work itself out or get better, then the next person in line is the head coach. So he wants to, you know, make sure that whoever he puts in that position is capable of not just doing the job, but sees the vision that he sees, that is capable of ushering this offense into the new way of doing things in regards to the NFL. This is a passing league. Yes, you need to be able to run the football, but you better be able to score points in bunches if you need to. And at this point in time, the Titans can't.
Yeah.
They haven't been able to prove that they can. So you got to bring in someone that's like-minded, that's innovative, that not only just know how to put together a game plan, but take that game plan, but then implement that game plan, knowing when to call certain plays, when not to, have a feel for the game. So he want to make sure that he goes out and, you know, overturn every stone possible to make sure, even if it is Tim Kelly, to make sure he hires the right guy, because hiring that guy will dictate I believe, would dictate whether you keep your job or lose your job within the next year or two.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I also think he is he's holding out. And I could end up being wrong on this. They announced Tim Kelly today. Who knows? I think he's holding out on one of the guys from the Chiefs.
Hmm.
Those Matt Nagy, Eric Bieniemy. Bieniemy is once again gone through the interview process for head coaching jobs. Now, I think if Bieniemy does finally land a head coaching job, which it doesn't look like he's going to this year, which is a shame, that Nagy would just be the OC again for Kansas City. But it also may behoove Eric Bieniemy to try and take a job like the Titans as OC where he can call plays. That might help him in the head coaching process to finally get a head coaching job.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But I think Vrabel wants to see what happens with the Chiefs, because there is that week in between the AFC Championship and the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So that could give them an opportunity to really sit down and talk and then, see if he could get one of those guys. But and then Charles London's another one that I think is interesting. Mm-hmm. That, maybe you have a situation where you bring him in, keep Tim Kelly, but bring London in as a passing game coordinator. Mm-hmm. And can help develop young quarterbacks like you've been talking about. Because that's going to be the key with whoever is the OC. You need offensive line coach that's going to develop an offensive line because you're going to have a lot of young linemen. Mm-hmm. As you're trying to rebuild that thing and then develop whatever quarterback you're going
to
get.
Yeah, you're going to have to. Whether they hire as much as I do believe they need to, sort of wrap up, this search for offensive coordinator, I don't think they feel they need to be in a rush. And,
yeah.
I can understand that just because, I want them to, name an OC so we can have more to talk about, So
sure.
So now we can start to put things together and see where this thing is going. If they're going to change philosophies, are they staying with the same philosophy they had over the last 5 years since Ron Vrabel's been here? Selfishly, I want them to name one now. But
yeah.
Realistically, I think they can take their time. At naming their OC. I think they can take their time all the way up into, the Super Bowl to figure out who's going to be our OC.
See, I don't know if I would wait that long, because don't you want to kind of have that in place for the Senior Bowl, as you can, evaluate talent?
Yeah, but all these guys, whoever you hire is doing that anyway.
Yeah,
whoever
true.
You're hiring is going out to the Senior Bowl, and these scouts are going out, and everybody's evaluating players. You know exactly what you need from your team, regardless of any system you get. You need a left tackle. You need another guard, possibly. You need a backup center or a starting center moving forward. You need another playmaker on the outside. So these are things that, even without an offensive coordinator, I know I have to get. So it's not a pressing thing that, okay, I got to get – it's not like the GM where I got to get my GM, because we all need to, sort of break down this roster and look over this roster and be in agreement on who we get when we get that player, whether it be via the draft or free agency.
Yeah.
The GM is a big part of that. Offensive coordinator, we can do things while still trying to look for our offensive coordinator. Now, you don't want to get into – late February, March, and you still don't have – no, you don't want to wait till then. But around the Super Bowl, maybe that – that first week or two, I think that's sort of the cutoff line, like the second week of February, where you should have found your OC by now, because no one's playing now.
Yeah, I think they'll have it by then, because they want to have time before the combine.
Exactly.
And all that stuff. But I kind of wonder. You just see a lot of movement with these teams, making their moves. Vrabel always plays things close to the vest, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's no surprise that, I was telling someone I wouldn't be shocked if he's already done it and just hadn't told anybody yet. that's just kind of how he works sometimes. But I think it's going to be interesting to see who they get and then what happens with the Colts, mm-hmm. There are signs pointing to Jim Irsay sticking with Jeff Saturday, mm-hmm. as the head coach, which I look at that as, hey, good for the Titans, because I don't know if that's a great move. But, you know, at the same time, you can connect some dots. He played a couple of years in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers, so maybe, you know, maybe that's the move. But I read a tweet that said that, you know, Saturday would be able to pick his own staff, which, okay, is that, you know, is that a good thing? But and so that's obviously going to factor into things. What's Houston going to do? Mm-hmm. I said earlier, I think DeMeco Ryans makes sense there. Former player there, 49ers defensive coordinator. I mean, that guy to me is going to get a job. Dan Quinn's going to get a job. Sean Payton, I thought, was going to get a job, but maybe not. So, so it's interesting right now with all these coaching moves.
Yeah, good thing for the Titans. They, you know, they don't have to fill the, you know, the void that, you know, the most important void, which is the head coaching job. They don't have to fill that, but they do eventually have to get their offensive coordinator. And I'm sure, like you said, I mean, Vrabel could probably already know who he really wants. You know, it's probably just formality now. He's just got to go through the process and hope, if it's not Tim Kelly or someone else that is not coaching right now, then he can get a Matt Nagy in the door or Airbnb in the door right after the AFC Championship game, where they have that week of, you know, of really just preparing and whatnot, and then you get another week before you play the Super Bowl. So this 2 weeks, like you said, Chase, this 2 weeks will be, it will be, it will tell the direction. Well, I guess the next 2 or 3 weeks will tell, you know, whether it's someone in-house or, you know, someone, you know, at another yeah. team, more than likely Kansas City, whether it's Nagy or Bieniemy.
Well, because, I mean, I think in theory, you know, you don't change the scheme per se, but I think you changed a little bit.
Well, if you bring in a Nagy or a Bieniemy, you got to change it. You know, the terminology, everything's going to change.
Yeah.
You know, but if you go with Tim Kelly, then a lot of things will be changed. A lot of things will stay the same. What will change, I think, and we won't know until the season starts, is how, not necessarily how the game plan is put together, but how it's called. And we won't know that. We can't, unless we can't sit here and say, well, Tim Kelly's a great play caller. Well, I'm not going to look at what they did in Houston.
They had Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, they had Deshaun Watson, but I'm still not going to look at what he did necessarily in Houston. I want to see what he can do with the talent here.
Right.
You know, because if he was head and shoulders, you know, if he was just that guy at offensive coordinator, Houston would have kept him. Houston would have made him head coach, or they would have kept him as OC. He has to prove it here with the talent that they have here. So even if they do, it's not like a Nagy or a Bieniemy. Well, we've seen it. Even if they do hire him here, we're not going to know how good of a play caller he is until the season starts.
I'm going to ask you something for coming up next. In your career, and I think I already know the answer, but in your career, the best offense that you ever played in and why you felt it was the best offense that you ever played in. We'll discuss that, and I have somewhere I'm going with that. We'll discuss that coming up next. Preds fans, hang out tonight before the Preds game at the Superbook Lounge in Landshark Bar and Grill in Margaritaville on Broadway with us, 1025-1063 of the game. Place your bets with Superbook and enjoy great food and drink specials. Plus, you can enter for a chance to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. It's Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace with Chase here on 1025-1063 of the game.
How open are you to changing the offensive scheme?
Well, I think we change things every year. And I want coaches and people, and we had this conversation this morning, that are versatile, that have multiplicity, that can adjust, that aren't just married to one specific way of looking at a player, of coaching a scheme, coaching a technique. You know, there's a bunch of different ways to rush the passer. It's a bunch of different ways to block or to run a route. Outside zone, inside zone. The whole idea is to have people that, you know, can function and excel in doing different things. And I want to do that offensively. I absolutely do. I want to do whatever's best for our football players, and they can excel. The young players that we saw this year, finding ways to help them make a jump, and then the veteran players that we'll have back.
That's head coach Mike Vrabel last Friday talking about the offensive scheme. Welcome back in, Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. Chase McCabe in for Caroline Fenton today alongside Derek Mason. Willie will be along here shortly. So I asked Derek the question of the best offense, in his opinion, that he ever played in and why. Before he answers that, based on that clip, you know, and he likes to use multiplicity and that word and, you know, different ways to do things. I do think that the biggest problem with Todd Downing was it came across very one-dimensional, even though since Derrick Henry's been here, it's been a run-based defense, a run-first defense. Arthur Smith, I think, did it best where he could get the most out of players because he adapted to the players. He did a lot of different things based on the same scheme, but still did a lot of different things with each players to maximize their abilities. And I just don't know if Todd Downing could really do that. I think that is what Vrabel is looking for. And then to my question to you, I think I know the answer or one of the answers, and that was the exact case with those offenses.
Yeah, I mean, if you listen to Vrabel talk, and he said, well, we change things every year, but he segued to the defense. Most of what he was talking about with the defense, it wasn't the offense, it was the defense. He said, oh, well, in the offense, yeah, you can run a route. You know, there's a lot of different ways you can run a route. No, it's not. There's not a lot of different ways you can run a route. You know, concepts is different, but you can't. A slant is a slant, whether you run it from the inside or the outside. Yeah. You got to run it based upon, you know, what the defense is doing. Whether you come flat across the cornerback's face or flat across the linebacker and keep on trying to find a hole, or you get to the corner and run it at a higher angle and try to find that hole. There's only so many ways. It's only one or two ways you can run a slant route, you know, or three ways. Take an outside release, but it's still a slant. A slant is a slant is a slant. You can't change too much how you run a slant or a curl route or a hitch or an in route or a comeback or a go. He was talking more, I think, in the defense, in regards to the defense, but there are things from an offensive standpoint that you can do. And one thing he said was correct. Like, you want to be multiple. You want to be able to take, you know, whether it's A.J. Brown and line him up at the slot, line him up outside, you know, line him up as a point guy in a 3-by-1 if you're in a stacked or in a bunch formation. Those things you can do different with different guys. You can't do that with everybody else. You got to identify who your playmakers are and then put them in positions. I've said this like for the last year and a half. Find out who your playmakers are and put them in positions to make plays. Chigakonkwo, find out. You finally found he was a playmaker. It took you half the season. I don't know why it took you half the season because, I mean, hell, I saw it when he first started playing. Like, this guy, he's young, but he's a player. Find a way to get him the ball. They didn't do it until the last half of the season, and you saw what happened. He was their playmaker on offense from a pass-catching standpoint because Traylon was out a lot.
Yeah.
So when you're putting together an offense, you have your foundation of what this offense is. It's whether it be the offense you've ran over the last 4 or 5 years or whether it's a new offense that's coming in from Kansas City or somewhere else. Once that offense is brought in and once that offense is established, you can't change it.
Yeah.
You know, to me, Vrabel, when he says that, I think he's saying it to people that don't truly know how that works, like truly know how it works, because if you truly know how it works, you know you can't change an offense every week.
Right.
You work within the offense that you have, and you can run. You can run a little bit more in that offense this week, or you could pass a little bit more on that offense this week. I can take a A.J. Brown or a Traylon Burks. This week he was lined up in the slot. Next week we're going to put him outside. But we're asking him to run the same type routes that everybody's running.
Right.
We're not changing the offense from a, you know, what we've been doing the last couple of weeks to now we're going to run the offense that Kansas City's running. The verbiage is different. We can't run that offense. You know, we can't run it from a philosophical standpoint. We can run it from a concept standpoint. All offenses are, in a sense, they mirror one another. It's just the terminology and sure. How do we get to point A. We may be get to point A differently, but I can't all of a sudden say, guys, we've been running this, let's call it, I don't know what offense you want to call it. Let's call it the Downing offense.
Yeah.
We can't run a Downing offense and then say the next following week because it didn't work. Oh, we're going to – y'all see what Kansas City was running?
Yeah, we're going to change.
We're going to change everything and change it to what they're running, verbiage and everything. You can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be able to – what I believe he was saying was, and he said it in a sense, you got to be able to take that offense and be creative and be multiple in it.
Which is what Arthur was.
Which, absolutely.
And that's why Arthur was so good at it because, and I will never forget when he was introduced as the offensive coordinator mm-hmm. and he did a press conference, he said, I'm going to take what Matt did this past year, meaning uh-huh. Matt LaFleur. I'm going to take things I learned, you know, from Malarkey. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take things I learned, even going back to Wisenhunt, you know, like stuff that he has learned over the years in the different offenses and coaches that he's worked with, and that helped him adapt to the players that he had. It mm-hmm. was still the basic Shanahan-based
exactly.
type offense, that derivative, but he was able to make it into his own, and Downing just couldn't continue that. Mm-hmm. That's what I think Vrabel's looking for.
Exactly, and he would be right, but he can't. You know, when he says, well, we change every year. We change off, you know, philosophy. No, you don't. You know, your players change, yes. You got to change from the standpoint of figuring out how do we incorporate player A into what we're doing and maximize his ability to go out and play this game. He said three things, and I finally found him. He says, teach, develop, and inspire. So within this offensive system, we got to teach him the system. Okay, so we can't teach them one system and then a week later teach them another system.
Yeah.
There's no continuity there. So we got to teach them this system over the offseason. We got to develop them within this system. And then we got to inspire them to go out and orchestrate and run the system the way it's supposed to be run. So if you're telling me these three core things are what you hold on to, you can't be changing the offense every year or you can't be changing the offense every week.
So what? How would you answer my question? What was your favorite offense you played?
I've had a few.
You had two. Les
and Mike Heimerdinger. And both of them were great. You know, Les led us to a Super Bowl. The offense he was running was perfect for that Tennessee Titan team, for that era of football. It was perfect. And we went to a Super Bowl because of that offense. But I think they, you know, eventually, you know, you make the change or they decided to make the change because, you know, Eddie was getting a little bit older, a little bit more beat up. We had to find different ways to score. We had to sort of branch out of the norm. We had to become, you know, a team that can not only run the football but pass the football. So we went with Mike Heimerdinger.
Yeah.
Before I get to Heimerdinger, listen, I had Camp Cameron. In Baltimore, I had Rick Neuheisel, I had Jim Fossil. Those guys were good coordinators. I love Rick. Rick is my guy. Cam is my guy too. Cam is like that 4-year window or 3-year window I had with Cam was wonderful because Cam understood it. He understood the older guys. He understood our limitations. He understood the things that we can do. And he always made sure that, okay, I'm going to make sure that I put in these 3 or 4 plays that I know my veteran got to run. He would put me like, he would tell me there's 2 or 3 routes that I know can't nobody stop you on there. And it was true. It was a comeback. It was a nonstop. And it was a sluggo stop. We could run a sluggo stop versus any coverage, and they couldn't stop it. It's a hard route to stop, but you got to have time to throw it. I loved him because he understood that, and he would say, these are the routes we're going to run. We can run you on other routes, but if I want to get you the ball and I want to get a first down, these are the routes we're running. All right, cool, coach, I got it. Heimerdinger was hands down to me because he helped. Les Steckel started it. Les Steckel gave me the motivation with his notes and everything else and him just talking to me, being a, noticing me as a player. And then Mike Heimerdinger took it and said, listen, once I finally got in there and I proved that I can play to him, he said, man, just go out and play football. As long as you're on the same page with Steve, go out there and play football. Don't go outside of the framework of what we're trying to do. But if I draw up, you know, a comeback route and I tell you to run it like this, if it's not, if you can't find a way to get open, Steve will stick with you.
Right.
Be creative within what we're teaching you. And I think that's the same thing he gave with the guys in Denver when he had time with Denver with those receivers. And he gave us that opportunity, not just myself, but Kevin Dyson, Drew Bennett, all the guys. That's why we were able to flourish in that offense. Even Steve, he won an MVP in that offense. Yeah. We were able to flourish in that offense because Mike Heimerdinger understood everybody's limitations, everybody's strengths.
Yep.
And he allowed us to go out there and play. Don't be pigeonholed to what we're doing.
Sure.
If the defensive back is standing right there, then find a way to get open. It's not always going to work the way we drew it up. But you and a quarterback on the field, I'm not. So as long as y'all make it work, as long as y'all two are on the same page, I'm good with it. And he was absolutely right. That's why it seemed, you know, that's why Steve and I was so, it was just like peanut butter and jelly. Just go out there and boom. Because he knew exactly what I was doing. I know what he wanted. I knew what he was doing, and we always found a way to get open, whether it be myself or Drew or Kevin or McCarron.
Yeah. 615-737-1025. That's our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com. If you want to weigh in on the offensive coordinator discussion and what the Titans are looking for, it's Chase McCabe in for Caroline today. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, 1025-1063, the game. Caroline Willie, I had to think of the name of the show. Caroline Willie and D-Mace, 1025-1063, the game. Chase McCabe in for Caroline Fenton today alongside Derek Mason. Willie will be along here in just a minute. Talking about the Titans, their offensive coordinator search, what is next for the Two-Tone Blue? And we're going to be discussing this, you know, throughout the offseason. Bill Barnwell has an article up on ESPN Plus. How seven teams can make 2023 NFL playoffs potential offseason moves. And this is geared towards seven NFL teams that made the postseason in 2021 and then missed it in 2022, which includes the Rams, the Packers, the Titans, Patriots, Steelers, Raiders, Cardinals. This is kind of a funny line. There's a large gap between the team in seventh and every other team. If you're a head coaching candidate getting calls from a 602 number, consider this free advice. So I thought that was pretty good. But so here's what he's got. He's got the Cardinals as the last team. Mm-hmm. They fired Cliff Kingsbury. The Raiders with Josh McDaniels. Could Brady end up there? We'll skip the fifth team for a second. Then he's got the New England Patriots at four. And then the Steelers at three, what they need to do, the Packers at two, and then number one being the Los Angeles Rams, the defending Super Bowl champions. So number five on this list will be the Tennessee Titans. And he goes in depth with them. And obviously the questions surrounding them would be, do you keep Tannehill? Do you keep Henry? He has Taylor Lewan as, you know, okay, do you restructure and bring him back? Bud Dupree. All the moves that Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel have to make. He says the Titans, let's make both cases. This is what he says. Let's make both cases. If Vrabel and company are inclined to believe the second half of the 2022 season was an arbitration, they can point to an absurd stack of injuries as their fatal flaw. They had 22 players on IR by the end of the season, which included Tannehill, and the entire starting offensive line, linebackers David Long and Zach Cunningham. Obviously, they never had Harold Landry because of the ACL. and then Dupree was in and out of the lineup, and Jeffrey Simmons was playing through an ankle injury. The Titans should get all of those guys back next season. They have the number 11 overall pick in April's draft, their highest selection since 2017. So they could essentially run it back like we've been talking about. If the Titans go that route, they'll need to commit further to their core. Tannehill, Taylor Lewan, and veteran running back Derrick Henry are in the final year of their contracts and would get new extensions to create cap space. I don't think that happens with Lewan. I just don't. I think Lewan's gone.
I'm with you.
I was on the maybe bring him back on a cheaper deal train, but I don't think so. Even he thinks he's going to get cut. So that's something. He mentions restructuring Dupree's deal, which I haven't gotten a chance to ask you about this because you were like, Dupree's got to go. In a league that it's hard to find pass rush, even though he's been hurt, if you can restructure it, would you consider bringing him back?
No.
You say no.
No.
You
need to move on. This would be going to what, the third year of the contract, and he's been injured for most of it.
Yep.
And history tells me he's getting older and he's not going to get healthier. So you move on from him. You try to find if you can trade him along with maybe someone else, then you do that. If, you can, release him without any, not much repercussions as far as the salary cap, then you do it. But he hasn't been – he was hurt coming in, and he's been hurt ever since. Do you take a chance to pair him back up, with Harold Landry? I don't know, because what people got to realize this too, and I know – people are going to, Harold Landry's coming back. Harold Landry's coming back. Yeah, he is. But you know what's also coming with Harold Landry? A rehabilitation year.
Yeah.
He rehabilitated all last year. It's going to take him another full year to get back to where he was prior to the injury. So you're talking about having him potentially on the field this year, yes, Harold Landry, but he's not going to be the Harold Landry that we last saw. Not because he doesn't have the ability to play the position at a high level. He does. But he's coming off an ACL. It's going to take him another full year to get back to that player he was before that. And I guarantee you, next year, he will go through the season, and probably halfway through the season or something, he's going to say, I'm starting to feel like the player I was prior to the injury.
Yeah.
So don't expect this Harold Landry that we saw prior to the injury. It's going to take him a full year to work himself back into it. And then the 2024 season, that's the season where I believe he's going to truly be back to form. So you're going to have a guy coming in off an ACL and Harold Landry working his way back through everything. You need somebody on the other side that's just a bona fide stud. You need somebody that's young, without a history of injuries, they can get to the quarterback. You pair him up back with Bud Dupree, you're going to end up with the same situation. Bud Dupree missing games, in and out of the lineup. Vrabel has basically told you that, listen, this guy's too injured for me. Anytime he talks about Bud Dupree, it's just like I'm going to say something quickly and move on. When he talks about Jeffrey Simmons or Danico Autry or Tier Tart, he's gushing about those guys.
Yeah. Right.
He doesn't cuss about Bud Dupree. Why? Because he can't rely on Bud Dupree to play.
Right.
So why keep that? Aren't we trying to move away from that stuff, playing injured guys and keeping injured guys? Move away from them.
Well, Rand Carthon was asked about bringing in injured guys, and he goes, yeah, I'd prefer not to do that.
Exactly. And then the guys that are injured now, it's like, why do I want to keep on going down this road with a guy who has not proven, even in his Pittsburgh days, hasn't proven I can count on him for 17 games.
There's a text that I want to read coming up next, because it's about injured players and the medical staff that I want to get your opinion on. We will do that coming up next. Chase McCabe in for Caroline today. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game.